And good morning and welcome to Utah Politics Now. I'm Leslie Thatcher, joined by my co-host, Renee Bodley. After 8 years of serving on the Summit County Council, Claudia McMullen decided not to run for re-election. Two candidates, both of whom serve on our County Planning Commission, are hoping for your vote. Joining us in the studio for this week's Utah Politics Now are County Council candidates for seat B. That's Democrat Doug Clyde, who serves on the Eastside Planning Commission, and Republican Colin DeFord, who serves on the Snyderville Basin Planning Commission.
We will be questioning the candidates on a number of issues in the next 40 minutes, and at 10:45, we'll open up the phone lines to take your questions. We did a coin toss to determine who would start with their opening statement. Colin, you won the toss, and you decided to go last. So, Doug, we will start with you. Welcome.
Thank you. I would like to start off, first of all, by talking about my qualifications for my candidacy. As a candidate for county council, I'm the person with the experience that matters when it comes to the issues that face our county. I have worked for over 35 years in land planning, land use, government relations, and on projects and resort communities in Utah, California, and Nevada. Not to mention my service as a second-term member of the Eastside Planning Commission as well. Throughout my career, the majority of the projects that I have managed have been subject to thorough environmental reviews, which includes mitigation of environmental impacts. In that regard, the issues that face our county are all problems that I have faced before, and while they can be exceedingly complex, the mitigation of these problems are within areas of my expertise.
Thank you, Doug. Colin?
Good morning. Thanks for having us. So I'm Colin DeFord. I currently serve on the Snyderville Basin Planning Commission. I'm in my running into my sixth year on the Planning Commission, and it's about over 1,000 hours of service on the Planning Commission. My full-time job, I'm in the television broadcast entertainment business with on the technical side. I've done that for over 30 years, and I bring a really broad-based ability for problem-solving. And I have a natural curiosity that I believe will go far in this county in helping us approach issues with an open mind. When moving into the county council, I think that I would bring I'd be the one that would have a smooth and seamless transition onto the council. I would move the story forward, reframe problems, just ask questions and reframe them. And then I think I would do a really great job of collaborating with others on the council. Experience does matter. Again, I have over 1,000 hours of community service to this county, and I'd be great at it.
Okay. Well, both of you point to your time spent on your respective planning commissions. Doug, you've told us that you basically make your living as a planner of communities. Colin, you say you serve on the Planning Commission without being financially dependent on growth. So given your career, Doug, I mean, are you too close to this?
Well, my career runs a really broad spectrum. I was an integral part of developing the resort-based economy that you see around us right now. That includes both ski area development, actual ski runs and ski lifts, as well as the related bed base that goes along with that. But I also do just a broad range of planning activities that really affect all walks of life and all types of land use. For example, I'm currently the planner who is developing the Peace House project here in Park City, which will evolve into a facility that will house roughly 20 families. That's a nonprofit. I don't profit from development.
Yeah, but still, given all of that you've done, don't you have some conflicts then that you'll be facing as a county council member?
I think they're pretty small, if none at all. I don't have any projects in the basin of any significance, that is to say, in both the Snyderville Basin or in the east side of the county.
So, Colin, as the county tries to diversify its economy, wouldn't it be beneficial for us to have somebody who kind of knows the industry?
I think that we have those people. We have county staff. We have the planning department. We have our attorneys. We have that already. So we need as a county, we need diversity in what's on the council. We don't need what we already pay for in the county staff. And that's what I believe I bring. As I bring diversity, I bring new thought, I bring curiosity, I bring something that we don't have to this county. And the development that's happened in the past is not development we need to see in the future.
So, Doug, as a Summit County Council member, you're eventually going to have to decide on the proposed revisions to the Eastside Planning Code, something I believe you did not support as an Eastside Planning Commissioner. One, could you vote as a council member, or is there a conflict there? And two, you're running as an Eastside candidate but seem to be supporting the Westside version of the Eastside Development Code.
Well, there is no, let's start with the last. There is no Westside version of the Eastside Code. Matter of fact, what I encountered as I began to talk to citizens over there simply was that the massive rezone that would involve literally 8,000 units of sprawl was not one that was broadly supported by the citizens on the east side of the county. I would say that by and large, it's supported by the landowners, some of the landowners, but not all of the landowners. A lot of the landowners want to continue to farm. A lot of the other landowners and the cities and towns over there want to make sure that sprawl does not happen. And the east side and the west side are exactly the same in that regard. Sprawl does no one any good.
So you think you do have the support of your neighbors if, in fact, you were to vote against the proposed code revisions?
Yes, I think I have broad support on the east side.
Yeah. How do you feel about the proposed code revisions, Colin? Have you had a chance to look at them?
I have, and I've had a lot of discussions with the east side members on the maps and Chapter 3 and 4, the language that came through. The maps need a lot of study, and just there's the health department is currently coming out with some information on what it looks like over there for the septics and sewers, and so I think it's prudent for us to wait and see what the Board of Health recommends on where areas are appropriate on the east side for certain septic systems. So I think that's number one that needs to go into the maps. And then number two, you know, we need to identify and solve the problems that the east side is asking for the reason for this zoning and language change is they need options and they want the ability to farm if they want. They want the ability to separate their land if they want. They need the ability to parcel off land to their family. And so that's what it's working on. And it's currently at the council level, and the council sent it back to the commission for more process.
Yeah, is that what you heard though, from the residents, that they want the ability to do what they want?
Oh well,
is it a property rights issue here, or is it a
there are a lot of people on the east side who believe that the government does not have a job in regulating land use. They believe that they ought to be able to do what they want with their land. And, of course, the difficult job that a county council person and or a planning commissioner, for that matter, has to face up to is that when you make land use decisions, they have to be in the best interest of the health, safety, and welfare of all the citizens, not just the citizens who own the land. So we are taking into account their concerns, and we are currently drafting certain ordinances that would allow for such a family development of their own parcels. But what I strongly opposed was 8,000 units of primarily one-acre lot all on well and septic, all of it right down in the river bottoms.
Okay. We're going to get back to it. You're listening to Utah Politics Now here on KPCW.
This is Chris Robinson with Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties. KPCW is one of the many nonprofits our agents and companies support. They are the backbone of Summit and Wasatch counties in our incredible community. More info at bhhsutah.com.
Back by ever-popular demand, it's Odyssey Dance Theater's award-winning thriller. A ghoulish dance of monsters and maniacs, phantoms and freaks, eerily entertaining. This dancing spooktacular sells out, so get your tickets early for Thriller at Egyptian Theaters, September 23rd through October 9th. Recommended for ages 12 and up with parental discretion. Tickets at parkcityshows.com or 649-9371. The Egyptian Theater is one freaky nonprofit organization and a KPCW supporter.
Welcome back to Utah Politics Now. I'm Renee Bodley with my co-host Leslie Thatcher. This is a new public affairs programming show on KPCW. We're going to be talking to the candidates who want your vote this election year. We'll be talking to them up until right before Election Day, which is November 8th this year. We've got Doug Clyde, Colin DeFord, both running for Summit County Council here. You just heard us talking about growth and the proposed zoning changes on the east side of the county. Let's talk about resort growth. Specifically, let's talk about Mountain Accord and the efforts to preserve the Wasatch Back and to come up with some permanent designations for both recreation and development. Colin, we'll start with you. How do you see Summit County's role in Mountain Accord? And what connection, if any, would you like to see with the Cottonwood Canyons? Do you support One Wasatch?
As far as physical connections, the road infrastructure to Cottonwood Canyon, I wouldn't support that at this time. I mean, I would just need more information on that. As far as connecting maybe through chairlifts, that would be, I think, an ideal solution there. I'm not necessarily sold on Mountain Accord. I really am on the fence on Mountain Accord. I think that if you look at the money that Summit County and Park City's put into Mountain Accord, it's just basically coming back to us as traffic studies that we could have done ourselves. And so I'm not sure that the input is worth the output on Mountain Accord at this time. It's more weighted towards the Wasatch Front, in my opinion. So I don't support fully pulling out of it, but I certainly don't support throwing more money into it.
And there's about 900 acres there in Summit County, in the Monitor Bowl area, that what we were hearing from Chris Robinson is that both Vail and Congressman Bishop are looking at maybe pulling that out, that Vail's not part of Mountain Accord, and that's one of their concerns, is they don't want another layer of federal regulation over those 900 acres. How do you feel about that?
About adding it into federal regulation or pulling it out?
About Summit County not supporting Mountain Accord and the Central Wasatch National Recreation Conservation Act if it is pulled out. Chris Robinson says if those 900 acres are not included in this preservation, then Summit County would withdraw their support.
To me, I would support Chris's position on that, because I certainly feel that land use is something that we're not making more of it. We definitely need to protect it.
Doug?
Well, to begin with, starting off with the whole issue about Mountain Accord, is it good, is it bad? Mountain Accord was a multifaceted program. And so on the one hand, you have the conservation of land that you just spoke about. On the other hand, you had what was probably a billion-dollar transportation system associated with it that primarily was, you know, intended to get people from the airport to Sandy. I think we made a really bad error in judgment when we decided to throw money at that problem. Sandy's transportation problems are not ours. Sandy's economy is not ours. We spent a lot of time and a lot of staff time and a lot of money supporting that effort. And I think that now Mountain Accord has finally gotten pared back. And while the trains through the tunnels are not gone, they are at least diminished to the point where we are not talking about them daily. But I tend to agree with Colin. I think that most of the money that we put in there was either lost or it's coming back to us in traffic studies, and we could have just spent that money directly and probably been more efficient.
Are you pro-connecting all of the resorts? Do you like the idea of One Wasatch?
I have been, for anybody who knows me, since the late 70s, I've been in favor of the ski interconnect.
I want to jump back to a discussion with regard to the Eastside Planning Code revisions. I mean, we're talking about huge growth coming into the Rhodes Valley area, likely. And again, when we talk about the need for a sewer system, whose responsibility is that? Here in Snyderville Basin, we all pay the Snyderville Basin Reclamation District. I mean, is that burden going on to those folks living in the Rhodes Valley?
Well, that is exactly the problem, and that is that as the zoning was proposed, it was all to be done on septic system. And the truth of the matter is that the land simply will not support septic system at that sort of density. So the answer ultimately to development on the east side of the county, other than, you know, than perhaps some small family compounds here and there, is going to be found in a full developed water, sewer, and septic system. Water and sewer system. Now, the burden of that has to fall onto the developers. And that was the rub. The way the code was being designed and being passed is that the developers would escape that burden.
So, Colin, you would agree with that then? It's not all of our problem?
Well, so there are mitigations that can be done, but the big issue are the roads over there are not up to county standards. They're not wide enough at county standards. Eventually, they have to be remade. Eventually, that would probably give us the opportunity to open back up the underneath and then eventually figure out how to pay and put sewer in over there. But talking to the health department over there, there are ways to put – there's advanced septic systems that can go in very difficult areas that aren't like traditional systems, that then the water that comes out of the other end, it's clean water and just basically gets dispersed almost like a sprinkler system. So there are ways to put septics in very difficult areas where sewer is not allowed. It can be done, and so I'm interested to see what the health department comes out with their identification maps.
You're listening to Utah Politics Now here on KPCW Radio. I'm Leslie Thatcher along with Renee Bodley. We're talking with the county council candidates running for seat B, Doug Clyde and Colin DeFord. We'll be taking your questions at about 10:45.
Hi, I'm Matt from San Francisco Design, celebrating 25 years in Park City. San Francisco Design is happy to sponsor public affairs programming on KPCW. For 25 years, we have been providing home furnishings for a unique Park City lifestyle. We're located on Bonanza Drive and at sanfrandesign.com. San Francisco Design, love your home.
Hi, this is Colin Watkins from U.S. Bank, back to support our students of Park City High School with KPCW. We offer student accounts and parent banking solutions, including online and mobile banking and credit cards. U.S. Bank is located on the corner of Park Avenue and Deer Valley Drive, usbank.com, or 647-3726.
Welcome back to Utah Politics Now on KPCW. We're talking to the Summit County Council candidates for seat B this morning. In the studio with us, we have Republican Colin DeFord and Democrat Doug Clyde. Thanks for being here. Earlier this week, we had two council members who are running unopposed, Kim Carson and Roger Armstrong. We were asking them what they think the biggest issues are for the county council coming up over the next 4 years. Kim Carson said mental health is the biggest issue facing our county. Not only depression and suicide, but substance abuse. And Roger Armstrong chimed in and said substance abuse in particular and how it affects our county jails. Council recently heard a presentation by Sheriff Martinez about revamping our criminal justice system and letting nonviolent drug offenders out of jail and putting them more in a supervised setting. Colin DeFord, your thoughts on that?
So JRI is what the legislation passed last year. Governor signed it in 2015. JRI is a little bit of a burden on the county right now in that the great part about JRI is that it does take nonviolent criminals that are coming through the county jails that mostly have substance and addiction problems and then helps them into the mental health system and helps them get treatment. But the county council just added a sheriff deputy and then a administrative staff person to help to deal with this and work on the intake and then put people in place. Yesterday, the county council had a special session with Governor Herbert where this was a topic to Governor Herbert on we need funds. We need the availability of funds to help us to fund this JRI program here in Summit County as well. And the advice from Governor Herbert was that this is an everybody issue, and it really needs to start at the legislature. So the importance from Governor Herbert was that we need to go down to the legislature, make sure that all 102 members of the House down there and Senate realize what this problem is and look for funding.
But in theory, do you support the idea instead of spending money on incarcerating nonviolent offenders, instead putting that money towards the supervision efforts and the administration needed for that?
Absolutely.
Doug Clyde.
Absolutely, yeah. Incarceration is rarely the answer to anything that has to do with substance abuse. We have decades of history on that. On the larger issue, what changed in the law, in the state law, was that they took a bunch of offenses that were previously considered felonies and they turned them into misdemeanors, which means that people who would have normally ended up in the state in prison system came back to our county prison system. And that has put and will put an enormous burden on the county financially. And so we need to work with the legislature to the greatest extent practical to share that burden, because they really just turned it back on us. They turned it around.
So that's about substance abuse in our criminal justice system. Kim Carson also said she thinks mental health, when it comes to substance abuse with our youth, depression, suicide rates, she said it's more than a government issue. It's also a cultural issue. So, Doug, what role do you see Summit County Council or government playing in maintaining and protecting the mental health of its citizens?
Yeah, our role as, you know, as legislatures really is one of support. You know, we are not going to write any laws or pass any ordinances that are going to change substance abuse in our county. What we need to do is support those facilities that are in place and those people that are in place, primarily within our schools, and that has to do with organizations like Valley Mental Health, who provide a key role in providing counseling to our schools. We don't have enough of those people working in our schools. I think Valley Mental Health has said that we're dramatically underrepresented in that regard, and so we need to do more. But our role is supportive primarily.
We're going to be taking your phone calls here in about another 15 minutes. That number is 435-655-8255 or 655-TALK. We're talking with the two county council candidates running for seat B. It's a partisan race. Both of you had to file either as a Republican or a Democrat, and I'm assuming that you support the basic tenets of your political party. So give me an example of how those tenets would drive your decision-making process as a county council member. Doug?
Well, I think one of the things that essentially tipped me over the edge to run in this race was how land use is viewed. And typically a Republican / Tea Party sort of view of land use is the one that I just mentioned. Government has no right to tell us what we can do with our land. The reality is that the hard decisions and the hard work of government have to do with balancing the needs of all the people. And again, that's all the people, not just those people who own the land. So I think that is one of the fundamental differences between the Democrats and the Republicans.
So Colin, did he represent your basic tenet there correctly?
No, I don't believe so. I think that, to me, county council is as nonpartisan as you can get. And I can't think of a single issue that on county council that would come down to party lines.
Well, what about this issue?
I'm interested in thoughtful planning, and thoughtful planning makes amazing communities, and that's where I am, and that's where I have been on the Planning Commission, and that's where I will be.
Yeah, the last forum I saw both of you at, you were asked whether or not you would support your party's nominee for president. You had said, but reluctantly, Doug, yes. Colin, you said you hadn't made your mind up. Have you since?
Not really. I mean, I really don't support either candidate, so I'm really stuck in that middle ground that a lot of people are stuck in. I may go third party, and you know they say that throws your vote away, but maybe if more of us vote third party, then we'll start to see that it's possible that there is a third party that's needed.
Let's move on to transportation. Two transportation measures on the ballot for all Summit County residents. Will you be voting in favor of both proposals, Doug?
Yes, I will. We have, as anyone would know, we've got dramatic challenges for transportation. That's a quality of life issue. And transportation, unfortunately, is a very expensive problem to deal with. The county does not have a lot of surplus funds for anything, let alone for changing our transportation system dramatically. So I strongly support that referendum being turned over to the citizens to see whether they indeed want to pay for improved transportation.
And Colin,
I vote yes on both. To me, they're not perfect. They're not a perfect solution, because the perfect solution really is a cultural shift in the way we utilize transportation, the way we drive, the way we think about our cars, the way we think about getting around and moving around. And then it also is that we need to do a better job as planners and county councilors of making the developments accessible and putting things where we need them. Instead of, we need to ask the question, why are we getting in our cars to go there? Why aren't we just staying here and walking to it?
So it sounds like you both support this tax initiative, both of them, but it requires going forward, if it passes, some specific ideas, especially with capital improvements on how to improve the transportation issues here in the county. So Colin, let's start with you. What specific ideas do you have?
So at first, the ideas on the table I agree with, which are the collectors that would intercept traffic before they come into Park City. I think that's low-hanging fruit. And then realigning our bus system. We have the new transit system coming online in Kimball Junction soon, and then we'll realign our transit system so we can then feed into the outer lane Kimball Junction area and then hopefully start to go out to the east side and pull people in from there. And that's really what the first $8 million in the first year will help us with. And then as we get the next $8 million, then we continue to improve.
And Doug, what specific ideas do you have?
Well, I think the low-hanging fruit obviously are intercepting employees. We have there both the ability to control their access to parking where they work. We can do that through our development agreements with various projects. We can also control parking as the city has in the past by simply making it not available to people who want to park there all day as an employee. The good news about what's happening with us, probably for the first time in my 35-year, 40-year history here, is that the county and the city are working very cooperatively on these issues. And so I see this as being a very bright future, albeit that we don't have a lot of money to throw at it.
But still, somebody who had to drive in today from the east side of the county, how would you have felt if, you know, you had to stop at Richardson Flat, then jump on a bus, you know, to the transit center and walk up the hill to be here?
Like I had done a good job because I was the planner who put the Richardson Flat parking structure in place. By and large, we've largely ignored that structure now for, I don't know what that's been, maybe 6-8 years. I'd be happy if there was a dedicated bus lane. I'd be the first one on board.
Yeah. How about you, Colin? I mean, would that have worked for you? You know, to walk out your house to, you know, to a bus stop, jump on a bus, you know, to...
It wouldn't work in my situation. What would have to happen is I would need to have that first mile problem solved for me because it's a two mile walk downhill and then back 2 miles uphill to get to the house. And so that first mile has to be figured out and the last mile has to be figured out. So that's something that these funds are working on as well. There may be a dial-a-ride type thing that will come grab you and then drop you off at the nearest bus stop.
Well, and then we heard that those rides could be as much as $60 one way. I mean, how can we support something like that?
I think when we put technology involved and we start to whittle down the cost and the price, I don't think that's accurate.
Is there a price that you would be comfortable with? I mean, how much do we pay to fix that first mile?
It's going to be on par with something like an Uber type price. I mean, we're certainly comfortable as in the market paying Uber prices, so it'll be something around there, I would imagine.
Let's move on to affordable housing. We have seen the opening of the Richer Apartments recently, and I'm thinking this may be the first affordable housing units in
2012.
I was going to say forever, but yeah. The Park City Council has listed affordable housing as one of its critical priorities. It has pledged some $40 million over the next 5 years to address the issue. Likely that price tag could grow to some $70 million, given the council's desire to provide even more housing than they originally had talked about. What's your philosophy, Doug? We'll start with you, about the county's role in providing an affordable place to live. I mean, should we all have to pay for it?
The short answer to that is that we will ultimately have to pay for it, all of us, one way or another. we are either going to pay for it through deterioration of air quality and traffic because we don't have affordable housing here and therefore our employees are going to drive up from Salt Lake. Or ultimately, we're probably going to have to, if we're going to have a robust affordable housing plan in the county, it is probably going to have to be something that we're going to have to supplement, and we're going to have to go to the voters and ask them whether they're willing to supplement that or not. The failed policies of the past and the reason why we are where we are right now is that government has always taken the position that will get affordable housing is exaction from developers. By and large, that has not come close to solving the problem. And that's why Park City Municipal Corp. Has changed their direction. They now realize that they're not going to get anything from exactions. They're going to have to step up and pay for it if they're going to do it.
And Colin, I mean, in terms of, do we need to look to the businesses who are driving the needs and yet paying about $10 an hour to solve the problem?
We need to look to everybody because affordable housing is an everybody problem. It's an economic development problem. It's a transportation problem. It's no longer just people can't afford to live here problem. It's when you said, is it going to cost, you know, should we pay for it? You already pay for it. You pay for it because restaurants can't pay anything less than $15 an hour around here for employees, and you pay for it in your goods and services already, but it's just not going to affordable housing here. It's going for people to live outside the basin. The study just came out last month. We need about 1,000 units of affordable housing, and we don't have that. There was, I believe, the 40 that came online at Richard Place and another 200 or 300 at Silver Creek Village that who knows when that'll come online. So no longer is this a development by, you know, we're currently in our code, we require 20% of a development to be affordable housing. And since the Snyderville Basin Planning Commission put in the general plan 2 years ago, policy 2.3, which is no new entitlements, we closed the door really on any new affordable housing because there's no new development coming in. So it is, again, an economic development problem. It's a transportation problem, and it has to come from new creative ways.
Well, you mentioned there was a project in 2012. You'll have to refresh my memory, but I don't think it had anything to do with that 20% requirement.
You're talking about the Discovery Core mm-hmm. project? That's mm-hmm. currently in the Planning Commission right now, trying to work its way through. I mean, the site that there where that's going is such a difficult site for engineering, for soils, for everything that goes into it, that it's just been stuck in the planning department in engineering for a while, and it's coming back to, I think, its fourth work session.
Doug, you want to say something about
yeah,
that?
Yeah, I, of course, have been watching the Discovery Core project for years, and that is a clear example of how not to attempt to solve the problem. Because what they did when they passed those rules was they said, if we will give you a bunch of zoning if you give us some amount of affordable housing. And then they applied that to probably some of the more sensitive lands in the entire community. It was a real faux pas, a huge faux pas. And but it is just a clear example of the fact that that's not the way we're going to solve the problem.
Well, this was the only project they even got through.
They repealed that immediately.
So currently, this obviously the staff we know this is an issue, and we're currently working on two new zones that will probably go a long way towards helping affordable housing. They're mixed use one zone and a mixed use two zone that will then bring a TOD transit oriented development and mixed use developments into the basin, and with these type of zones, then it brings in the opportunity for a lot more affordable, attainable, and market rate housing that we can then cluster and create more density in a smaller area to solve a lot of these problems. And that goes to solving transit, it goes to solving economic development.
Yeah, but do we need to do that? I mean, does everybody who wants to live here be allowed to live here?
We could do it. We can do it without putting more burden into the system. We're not widening lanes on 224 to add more people. We're simply adding density in the right places and on transit systems that allow people to get around. Studies have shown that mixed-use development actually decreased transit and transportation because services are available where you are.
You're listening to Utah Politics Now on KPCW. We've been talking about transportation issues in Summit County, affordable housing in Summit County, and we're going to open the phone lines in 5 minutes. We know that a lot of our listeners have questions for these two candidates. And
we'll be back right after this underwriting message.
Tell businesses you heard them on KPCW. Let local stores, restaurants, and services know their support of local public radio means something to you by letting them know you heard their spot on KPCW. Check out more than 140 businesses and nonprofit organizations that support KPCW through underwriting by clicking on the Community tab on kpcw.org. Listen like a local. Shop like a local. Support like a local with KPCW.
Hello, this is Blake Christian, tax partner in the Park City office of HCVT CPAs. As we approach the important 2016 election cycle and the year-end tax planning season, we are very pleased to underwrite KPCW's newest program, Utah Politics Now. Thank you for listening, and HCVT can be accessed at hcvt.com.
Hi, I'm Joe Simmons with the Park City High School. Stay in touch with all things minors with our weekly Minor Nation Report. We'll bring it to you every Monday morning during Morning News with Leslie Thatcher, and in the afternoon with The Local View with Randy Barton. Highlights, scores, schedules, all things Park City Miners Athletics. The Minor Nation Report is brought to you in part by the Park City UPS Stores, Elliott Work Group, U.S. Bank Park City, and Miller Orthodontics.
Welcome back to Utah Politics Now. I'm Renee Bodley with my co-host Leslie Thatcher. In studio with us this morning, we've got Doug Clyde, the Democrat running for Summit County Council Seat B, and Colin DeFord, the Republican contender in that race. We've been having a great discussion about transportation, affordable housing. We're going to take your calls in about 3 minutes. That number is 435-655-TALK. That's 435-655-8255. We know you've got questions for these gentlemen. We'll open up our phone lines in about 3 minutes. Let's start with sustainability with this part of the conversation. Summit County has put a lot of money towards sustainability, helping to finance the efforts of Summit Community Power Works, installing solar panels on the health center. Colin DeFord, you're a Republican. Is this a government role or a free market role?
It's to me, it's an educational role, and that's what Summit County is doing. Is they're educating and they're leading by example, and I think that's something we need to do. I think that when we build new buildings, when we build new parking lots, we need to be that example. And so we need impervious pavements, we need solar panel, we need insulation, we need tight buildings, we need sustainable plants, just to be an example for the rest of the community on what can be done and what should be done.
So you're okay with the county paying for that?
Absolutely.
And what about for county buildings? County Council yesterday was looking at a policy that says all new county buildings and or remodels of existing buildings should be net zero. Do you think that's a worthy expenditure of tax dollars?
I do. Again, it goes to leadership. It goes to educating the public on how it should be done.
Doug Clyde.
I concur largely on all those points. I think that we are more than anything, the quality of our life is dependent upon the quality of the environment that we live in. And that's why we live here, and that's why people want to move here. That's why our businesses thrive. And while we may be a small part of the overall equation, we need to lead. And we need to lead by example, and we need to do everything that is practicable to be sustainable from an energy point of view.
I've been listening to your answers here this last hour, and other than you just have individual personalities, I mean, let's talk about the biggest differences between you, because I haven't really heard any. What do you think the biggest differences between you and Colin?
Well, again, it just it goes back to my decades of experience as a land planner, in which most of the projects that I work on come under the highest possible environmental scrutiny. I do a lot of work in California, have in the resorts in the Lake Tahoe Basin. I work on wetland issues. I work on air quality issues. I work on traffic issues. I work on transportation issues. I work on all those environmental hot topics. I know what the impacts of development are on those issues, and I know what the mitigation measures are on those issues. And that's a skill set that I think is absent on the council.
All right. But again, as Colin said, we've got, a room full of planners to do that.
We have a couple of planners who do that. But again, I would say that their depth and breadth is to some degree less than mine.
All right. Colin, what do you see the biggest differences between you and Doug are?
I think one is youth. I think that the next would be I come to this eyes wide open. My my eyes aren't buried into code and paper, and I have a natural curiosity that will help bring new solutions to the county, fresh ideas, fresh eyes. Doug says that he has 30 years of experience in building, and we don't need that type of development and that type of building anymore. What we need is something that he doesn't do, and that's mixed use, that's transit-oriented development, that's a new phase, a new era for this county that I'll help bring in.
I think that's a totally specious comment. I've been going to transit-oriented development conferences since probably Colin moved to Park City. And transit, of course, is a major issue when it comes to developing resorts and managing your parking and all the rest of that stuff. Transit-oriented development is nothing new. We've been working on that project, on that problem for decades as land planners. It happens to be hard. That's one of the things that experience does teach you, is that it's not like fairy dust. You can't just sprinkle it out there.
Colin, do you have a response
to
that?
I mean, where is it? We don't have it yet. And if you've been working on it for 30 years, I mean, I've been at it for 6, and I'm ready to move right into it.
We have a caller.
Caller, you're on the air.
Hello, I have a question for the candidates. And it deals with the so-called Boyer Tech Center. The Boyer, when it entered into the development agreement with the county, claimed that it would draw and bring to the county high-tech businesses with low impact on the community. They have failed to be able to do that. And in fact, the recent Skull Candy building, Skull Candy is hardly a high-tech business. And now Boyer is probably planning on trying to expand the types of businesses that it can bring to the so-called tech center. My question to the candidates is, should we hold Boyer and its feet to the fire and require that it live up to the development agreement, or should the county allow it to expand the types of businesses that will be permitted there?
Okay, thanks, caller. I'll let you listen off air.
So Chris Haig, I recognize that voice. Hi, Chris. So Chris, I've been on the Centerville Appalachian Planning Commission where, we've dealt with Boyer and the Tech Park. I'm in favor for a complete redo, and that's something I've been screaming about really loudly, is that I'm not sure why the county and Jake Boyer and the Boyers, we just can't come back to the table and just reopen this DA and redo it. I was the chair on the Planning Commission. There's a three-member committee that does use determination now for the Tech Center, and when Skull Candy came through that time, I was on the committee that gave them the allowed use based on the narrative that they gave us. And then they came back 2 years later, and the narrative had changed. And that was one thing that really bothered me, and I ended up voting a negative recommendation on Skull Candy going in because the narrative had changed from that original use. So for me, I think that we need to hold the tech center to its agreed uses. And if we want to change the uses, then we need to crack open the DA.
Okay. And Doug, do you have a response to that?
Well, I think we know that development has been fraught with controversy from the beginning. And primarily, if you listen to the developers, they say, well, we were just misunderstood. When you're in this business, if you sign an agreement, you need to understand what that agreement says and what it means, and that agreement becomes law. So I clearly believe that we ought to hold them to the full letter of that agreement, and that may ultimately get us into a position where we can renegotiate what that looks like. However, it may just be a completely failed business model.
The idea, though, was to bring in high-paying jobs and office space, and fast food restaurants aren't going to do that. So you guys are both saying bring in the jobs.
Well, Boyer says if you put an internet site inside of the fast food restaurant, that acts as tech. So, I don't think that works.
655-8255, if you have a question for one of the county council candidates running for seat B, the number again, 435-655-8255.
So currently, Summit County Council members serve at large. Do you think that should change? Should we ensure that Park City, the Snyderville Basin, the north and south sides of the county each have their own representative and have a fifth seat as an open seat? Colin, what do you think about that?
I really don't have much of an opinion on it at the moment. I mean, I feel that the east side may be underrepresented but on the county council, but I'm not sure that just creating a district just for them would solve and satisfy the issues that they're looking for.
Doug Clyde?
I likewise don't, I should say I don't believe that there is a need to create separate districts for the east side. We all are financially responsible for the good decisions and the bad decisions we make, regardless of whether they're on the east side or the west side. And those sort of financial decisions need to go with the majority of the people.
655-8255, you're listening to Utah Politics Now. Again, we're talking to County Council candidates Doug Clyde and Colin DeFord. Now, Doug, you had the opportunity to file for office to run against Taladere. He was the Republican candidate for seat E, I believe it is. Why did you make the decision to run against a west side, what has typically been a west side seat?
I disagree with the assumption that it's typically a west side seat.
Well, it has been since its inception. Let's put it that way.
ABCD, I don't think that matters, right? Has there been a west side or an east side representative? Mm-hmm. Sure. The reason why I ran against that seat was a couple of reasons. One is that I didn't want to invest the time to run against a two-year term. The second, but primarily, was that because my opponent in the Democratic Party ran for that seat, and he was the one who voted in favor of the massive rezone on the east side of the county. So I simply was compelled to run for that seat. I could not let that person represent himself as a Democrat. He was clearly a country mile short of Democratic ideals when it came to land use.
655-8255, again, taking your phone calls here for County Council candidates Colin DeFord and Doug Clyde.
A big issue in the county is 224 and the crossing of 224. Hopefully that's something that will come up in the next 4 years. We'll find a solution. Colin DeFord, what would you like to see happen there?
Specifically the entry corridor in 224?
Exactly.
I mean, it's ugly. It's ugly out there, and it's. I really believe that Kimball Junction, the whole area is ripe for redevelopment soon, probably in the next 10 years. So I think it's important, since 224 is UDOT controlled, the solution is not adding more lanes and moving cars quicker through Kimball Junction. That's not the solution to any transit or traffic issues out there. The solution, again, is a cultural shift. And then 224, the problem with planning is that individual landowners just look at their individual plot of land, and it's important that as a county and planning staff, that we step back and look at the Kimball Junction as a whole, because there's many stakeholders out there from Boyer to the Kimball Junction project to the UDOT, and that's something that we all have to get together.
Can you specifically address, though, the safe crossing that has been in the works for years now? I mean, it's supposed to be a joint project between the county and Snyderville Basin Recreation District.
Well, the problem is where is it going to go?
And where should it go?
Where should it go? And is it underground? Is it an overbridge? The underground part, I think, my understanding is that there were too many utilities and too many services underground for them to throw it underground in the ideal spot. And then when it came to the county council for a bridge, they just didn't like the location. So I think that's where it is.
What would you support, though?
I'd support a bridge, because I think that the bridge would be really nice. And then I think that we have an effective way to announce events into the town through some sort of clever signage.
Doug, do you have a position on that?
Well, the crossings across under or over 224 are extremely expensive. And again, then the question comes down to, to what area do you give preferential treatment, because you simply can't put them everywhere, right? Bridges or underpasses, from a pedestrian point of view, underpasses are a little bit more accessible. Bridges, as you know, have these long ramps that have to get up, like the one that crosses Highway 80 out there. They tend to be somewhat impractical. But I do support bridges for animal crossings. I think that with our concern about our large ungulates, the moose and the other large animals, if we're going to get them across 224, we need to do that by a bridge. We cannot do that effectively through through caves, essentially. Those animals don't go into caves.
We have just a couple of minutes left, so if you do have a question, now is the time. Otherwise, we're going to be running up against the NPR News. One last question here for you guys. The East-West Division is as old as the county itself. Has the current council done a good job about blending the lines? Because we hear about from candidates every election about, you know, about how we need to bring the two sides together. Has the council done a good job of that, or is it just a good thing to have different distinct areas, Doug, as a member of a resident of the East Side?
Well, they are distinct and different areas and populations of people, and they have different land uses. But to the question of has the council done a good job? Generally, I think over the decades we've done a very good job of trying to manage those divergent points of view. We have had in the past, for example, Representative Dave Ure, who has worked tirelessly to try and find good middle ground as he managed as a council person. We have lost that, I think, to some degree. Being that close to the East Side, I can bring some of that to the equation.
And you, Colin? I mean, do we need to blend the lines?
No, we definitely don't need to blend the lines. We're separate. We're unique. The West Side is completely different than the East, and the East Side is completely different on the North and the South. So I think it's very important to treat each one of those individually and understand the needs on the individual level down there of what everybody is looking for and what these needs and what's the best planning for each area.
Again, I don't think we have time for another question from the audience. So.
Time now for closing statements. And Colin DeFord, since he won the coin toss, you opted to do your closing statement last. So Doug Clyde, the Democrat running for Summit County Council Seat B, we'll start with you. You've got 30 seconds for a closing statement.
One of the questions that come up is how am I and my opponent different? And I think that one of those differences is that my opponent is yet to identify a position on some of our most environmentally pressing problems. And so in that regard, I think that's where we are clearly different. An example of this is water quality and water quantity. We are in violation of federal standards both on the Weber and the East Canyon Creek. The county is only taking minimal steps to address these problems. The cost of cleaning up the water is the responsibility of the county. We're all going to pay for that. And waiting only makes these problems more expensive. So that I believe, is a major difference between the two.
Thank you. That was about 50 seconds. So Colin, will we have the same?
There's no difference. Water quality, air quality, sustainability, those are all top priorities for me and this county. So we need to do what it takes to clean up. We have a lot of experts in this state that can help us work through it and figure out how to do it cost effectively, and I'm ready to go.
Okay, well, Colin DeFord and Doug Clyde, again, candidates for Summit County Seat B. Good luck. Thanks for your time, and we'll see you on the 17th.
Thank you, Lisa.
And coming up in future editions of Utah Politics Now, we'll talk to candidates for the Park City School Board. We're also trying to line up the candidates running for the 1st Congressional District. That's incumbent Republican Congressman Rob Bishop and his Democratic challenger, Dr. Peter Clemens. We'll also have representatives on to tell us more about the proposed $25 million open space bond, Summit County's two transportation and transit measures, as well as the pros and cons of a ballot initiative in Wasatch County on the North Fields.